हरिः ॐ सहना ववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
okay. Lord Brahma continued, My dear Lord Krishna, until people become your devotees, their material attachments and desires remain thieves, their homes remain prisons, and their affectionate dealings for the family members remain foot shackles. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. The sannyasis will object that the inhabitants of Braja are fallen in the net of material life in the form of attachment to sons and wife. However, what to speak of the householders of Braja, even your ordinary devotees in other places are superior to the sannyasis. Attachment and aversion are great thieves because they steal the great treasure of great bliss from the soul. The souls are bound up in the prison of household life so that they cannot criticize the Supreme Lord after having lost their wealth. As long as people do not get the mercy of your devotees and become your followers, they remain in this position. When they become your devotees, they develop attachment for bhakti and aversion to things obstructing bhakti. Because that's the natural position. Is anything and anyone connected to devotional service then is appreciated. Anything that's not is rejected. That's just the natural nature of the living entity, of the soul. When they
become absorbed in you.
As long as people do not get the mercy of your devotees and become your followers, they remain in this position. When they become your devotees, they develop attachment for bhakti and aversion to things obstructing bhakti. They become absorbed in you. These thieves, attraction and repulsion, expecting to grasp the great treasure of unlimited knowledge and bliss, when they become fixed in you, give up their bad qualities and instead do good service to others. Right, so this knowledge and detachment, then on the material platform, aversion and attachment. On the material platform, they're shackled. So you may think that, okay, I give up household life, like the question before, as the sannyasis may complain. But the problem comes is that then aversion is the thief that steals away their taste of devotional service. Point is, devotional service is only tasted when it's in connection with Krishna. If it's not in connection with Krishna, there is no taste. So whether we're attached or we are repulsed, we remain on the material platform. Because devotional service means it's about Krishna. Right? That's the whole point. Does that make sense? So for the devotees, they don't have this problem. So whether they're in the household life or in renounced life, it doesn't matter. It's whichever one's favorable for them at the time to engage themselves in the Lord's service. So if there's more needs, more facilities required, then household life accommodates that. They don't need, then sannyas life accommodates that. Is that? Or renounced life accommodates that. So that's all it is. It's just what's better to situate yourself. Does that make sense? Like let's say one's cooking for a festival. So somebody likes to cook the halava, right? Someone else wants to cook the sabji. So it's just the interest. So then what do they require different things. So in the same way as whatever is the nature that you can engage in Krishna's service, that's what's done. But for the materialists, then this attraction, repulsion, that simply gets in the way of their devotional service. The house, which is a prison, by performance of pious and impious activities binding them up, becomes a means of attaining the eternal Dhamma through activities of serving you and singing your glories. When the jiva becomes the devotee of Krishna, then the bewilderment, moha, from objects, formerly wife and sons, become causes of expression, anubhavas, of prema. Right? So then they, out of their affection for the Lord, engage their house, their family, in the Lord's service. So thinking of Krishna, then they want to do something nice for Krishna, so they arrange a program at their house. They engage the family in arranging that. So in this way, it becomes an anubhava of devotional service rather than a obstacle to devotional service. Right? Some of
those. Yeah. So where is the other the mental customs?
Yes, yes. But we take it as that's the primary aspect. Mm-hmm. That if I have house and family and all that and wealth, then I'll be happy. But happiness is something separate than things. Right? It's separate than having the static a relationship. It's about acting in a relationship and then the results that come from that action. Okay? So, therefore, but if you apply that, let's say we apply that very nicely on the material platform. So, what the scripture recommends, how we should deal in household life with all the relations and all the facilities, we do that nicely. Right? And so then, yes, we will get nice arrangements and nice material experiences, but it still won't satisfy the soul. So unless these things are engaged in Krishna's service, that's the only time that then one gets that result. Yes, so like you're saying, it's on the mental platform where we think that this itself is going to make me happy. That this is what's important. Because these are only secondary aspects to use in the Lord's service. We take them as that they themselves are goals. But even on the material platform, technically, they're not goals. You know what I'm saying? We say, oh, if I get this fancy car, then that's my goal. Right? But then you have the fancy car, then if you don't use it, then is that? No. Then no. So why do you want the car? Because you're going to use it. Right? And why do you use it? Because that gives you the particular experience. So the experience is what you want. But that experience is Krishna. So therefore, if you can get that experience of Krishna without having to go through all the trouble of getting that fancy car, then why bother? Right? But if, you know, for your service and other things that car is necessary, then you get the car. But otherwise, you don't need the car. Why do you need the car? You know, if it's only that, you know, going down the road, you know, the top down, you know, that breeze in your, you know, in your hair and this and that, then great, you could get that on the bicycle at you know, minimal cost and minimal speed. You know what I'm saying? You have to be out on the open road to get that in the car, but any little hill, you get that on the bicycle, you know? So, if that's all you're looking for, then, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. How can the sannyasis compare to this? My son, Sanat Kumar, has said the following to show the inferiority of such people and superiority of the devotee. Right? So Brahma is making these points. Right? This is a continuation of this is from the Krishna book. You know, what Brahma is saying. Right? So we see is that Brahma said this one point. You know, one verse here. And then Prabhupada, how he said it, that's the verse and the purport. But it's worded together, so it's one nice storyline. That's the expertise of writing. Right? So Sanat Kumar said, "The ocean of nescience is very difficult to cross because it is infested with many dangerous sharks. Although those who are non-devotees undergo severe austerities and penances to cross that ocean, we recommend that you simply take shelter of the lotus feet of the Lord, which are like boats for crossing the ocean. Although the ocean is difficult to cross, by taking shelter of his lotus feet, you will overcome all dangers." So that's from Bhagavatam 4:22-40. Hmm. Yes, so taking shelter of the Lord's lotus feet, then they're like boats to cross this ocean, right? If you're going to go across the ocean, going in a boat is so much easier than trying to cross it without a boat. Right? You know, and especially the example of holding on to the tail of a dog. That may not work, right? I have not heard of that, right? Is there any, the first, circumnavigation of the globe holding onto a dog's tail, you know? No. What about just crossing over one of the oceans? No. What about just crossing over the channel? No. Okay, so it's not happening. We don't even hear of anybody using it to get across the pool, right? No. So, yeah, it's not recommended. So, and then here he's just mentioning that point that they're like boats, and then the boats, it's very easy to cross. What he hasn't drawn out, because it's not the topic here so much, is that when you enter that boat, take shelter of that boat, then the whole ocean becomes reduced down to the size of a calf's hoofprint. A calf's hoofprint. Yes. And so, the boat reaches both sides, so you just, by getting on the boat, you're already on the other side. So the boat stays there, and people from this side can still get on the boat. So you just get on the boat and come off the other side. You don't even have to cross. Right? But that's a different point, you know, a further point. And the inhabitants of Braja have even thousands of times more greater prem than these Grihastha devotees. So these Grihastha devotees are doing so nicely, engaging everything in the Lord's service, seeing everything, you know, like devotees like Priyavrata and Rishabdev and the Pandavas. So they are doing such a great job here. But then it says the inhabitants have thousands of times greater prema. Because it's not about all these things and engaging and how nicely they're engaged. It's just about pleasing Krishna. Though you are the Purna Brahma, you show yourself as dependent upon these devotees by taking the form of their son. Right? He's the complete Brahman. But that means everything's contained within him. But he takes shelter of his parents just for that reciprocation. No, but it doesn't mean you can have it. But, anybody? No? Okay. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur punts out. But this is not, this is in making the established point. As, how you say, see, there's a, it means the pontiff, he can pont. But those who are not the pontiff, if they pontificate, that's a problem. Right? So therefore, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's in the position to pont like that. But we should not, therefore, become proud and think we can do the same thing. Otherwise, that would be pontificate. Right? Yes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that some think that the Purna Brahma, becoming a son in Braja, is not real, not absolute, and that those devotees are an illusion. In reply to this, Brahma recites the next verse, right? Because some will say, that's just on the mundane platform, because Brahman means that it's beyond qualities, there's no qualities, it's just nothingness, right? You know, it's just, it has the Buddhistic element. Lord Brahma, so to counter that, then Lord Brahma says, my dear master, although you have nothing to do with material existence, you come to this earth and imitate material life just to expand the varieties of ecstatic enjoyment for your surrendered devotees. Right? So his taste is expanding the taste of the devotees, and the devotees' taste is expanding his taste. So that way it perfectly works. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, as a lamp appears bright in the darkness, but is insignificant in the sunlight, or a diamond does not glitter on a white background, but appears brilliant against a dark background, the pastimes do not appear so astonishing in Vaikuntha as they do when performed in the material world. Though Vraja is spiritual, just as Krishna appears like a mortal person, so Vraja also appears like part of the material world. In this place, the pastimes appear more wonderful. Are most wonderful. Right? So like the example of these when you have an item, so when it's in its opposite environment, then you see it to be the most outstanding. So therefore, the pastime performed in Vaikuntha, then that's standard. That's where they belong. That's how they do. So you may not notice the significance of it. But when those pastimes are performed here, in other words, Vaikuntha descends down here, and in the Vaikuntha here he performs those pastimes, then in comparison to what's around, right? In other words, to the darkness for the lamp, or to a dark background for the diamond. So in this world of darkness or illusion, then his pastimes appear very brilliant for us. So we can notice. Because what we can say is, oh, so does that mean they're better here? No, it's not that they're better. It's just that we'll notice them here. Because the difference between what we're doing and what Krishna's doing is so great, then we can appreciate it. Otherwise, we won't even notice. Right? We'll just think there's something, just another guy in another village. Right? Okay, he's got some cows. Nice. Right? You understand? But because it's done on the background of ignorance, then we do. So, because that's what we're getting. We're seeing the shining of the ignorance. It seems to be a contradiction, but in the summer, if anybody happens to be here in the middle of summer, or any time like that, say starting after, you know, once the festival starts, you know, the sun's out, it's bright, it's hot, right? So when the sun is nice and bright and hot, and it's exactly midday, then if you have the opportunity and you have some water, you bend over the water and look at the water, there's a shadow, right? But you'll see that shadow, it's almost like has an effulgence to it. Because around the edge, the sun is more bright on that edge compared to the darkness. Does that make sense? That's what attracts us to the material world. We think it's the material world that's shining, but actually it's the sun. Right? But we're seeing it on the background of the darkness of ignorance, and so therefore we notice it, right? The whole material world is just dead matter. And that little bit of shining that comes from the actual sun of Krishna, we see that. But we see it in matter. But now when we see it in relation to his pastimes, then we start to understand it's Krishna that is the sun, not the dead matter. Does that make sense? So that's then what's happening here. Not that the pastimes in the spiritual world are not as good as here. It's just that they're unlimitedly greater than any happiness here, but that's way beyond our capacity. Like a thermometer goes up to what? You know, 100 degrees. That's it. It doesn't go up to 1,000 degrees or 10,000 or a million or... But that's what you require to be able to appreciate. There, so since we can't, then in comparison, then we see it's different. Lord Brahma continued, and the idea of them being wonderful is, then we'll become attracted. And being attracted, then we'll take up Krishna consciousness. Lord Brahma continued, there are people who say, I know everything about Krishna. Let them think that way. As far as I'm concerned, I do not wish to speak very much about this matter. Oh my Lord, let me say this much. As far as your opulences are concerned, they are all beyond the reach of my mind, body, and words. And if they're beyond his mind, body, and words, and he's Brahma with four heads, you know, then what about everybody else, right? So there's no comparison. So he doesn't even want to speak upon their foolishness. But he just says, so let's just say this. I, Brahma, can't understand it. So how can they say that they're understanding it?
Brahma, he has a rich relationship with Krishna, servant.
I think it has, I can't remember, but I think it's servant and friendship. Okay. So it also depends upon what aspects you're looking at. Just like Narad Muni is sometimes described as Shantaras, but other places he's described as Shantadasya, Dasya Sakya, even Vatsalya. So Narad Muni's in a unique position that basically he appreciates all the rasas, you know, whether it's sweetness or majesty. But he does identify himself as a Vaikuntha devotee. Like that. But he can appreciate everything. So that's why he's unique amongst the jivas. Because all jivas, any sampradaya, anywhere and anything, they can all appreciate the example given by Narad Muni.
Can we say that Rama, the son of Narada Muni, is also appreciating Vaikuntha?
It means he has the position of formality as one of the demigods, but in his actual position, then that's going to be more hard to appreciate. Because in here, it doesn't matter. The point that we're trying to get here is the that surrender to Krishna, that understanding of the pure love for Krishna. Right? Like the other day, question came up: is that one devotee had heard that some other devotee connected with other, you know, institutions had recommended, you know, meditation on the Astakaliya Lila. And so then the question comes up, is that an important thing? Is that, you know, part of our sadhana? Because people will say, yes, Bhaktivinoda Thakur gave it and this and that, but Bhaktivinoda Thakur clearly states, you know, quoting from Gopal Guru Goswami, is no, it's not part of sadhana. It absolutely has nothing to do with sadhana. Point is you have to remember Vrindavan. So if you're always remembering Vrindavan, then the detail of what's happening during the different times of the day, you know, has some meaning. But if you're not remembering Vrindavan, it's not a sadhana. It's part of the natural, spontaneous thing. Do you understand? Young girls and young boys, is it a sadhana that they have to sit down to meditate on each other? Or is it a spontaneous, natural thing? So that's the whole thing. So now some 8-year-olds are saying, no, we got to sit down and meditate, you know? Like that. And so, you know, okay, you know, you're a girl, okay, here's Ken. Start meditating. You know? It doesn't work. It's not how it works. Does that make sense? So for us, what we have to understand at this point is that aspect of surrender. And how, you know, his astonishment that was there, and now his mood of servitorship to the Lord has come out, and that in explaining the philosophy, then he's bringing out in his prayers the wonderfulness of the residents of Braja, and how their position is the highest, and how he wishes himself, even though he's an incarnation of the Lord, he wishes he could just be a blade of grass in Vrindavan that the residents of Vrindavan, any resident, would step over. Because if you step over him, then the dust from their feet then lands on him. I guess it's hard to say which is the head on a piece of grass, but you know. The point is that principle is there. Does that make sense? So in these things, take what's given at this point and catch that, and then it naturally leads to the next step, because it's a progression. We see in the conversation, though the conversation may not seemingly be chronological, right, in the Puranic histories. Certain aspects are, but certain aspects are not. But there's a progression in the understanding and in realization. So that's what we have to catch. So it's the slight difference, let's say, between Vedic concept of presentation and the modern. The modern, then, you're going to have the aspect that it has to be a chronology, it has to have that logic and all that, and only then does it actually work nicely. And so, what is the chronology of facts and figures? Right? But in the Vedic, it's a chronology, it's still a chronology, but of the understanding. So therefore, it will be going through what gets you to understand. So now, if the facts being presented have a chronology, fine. But if not, it doesn't matter, as long as it went through the stages to get you to that point of realization. And in doing so, we see, because the facts and figures all come from Krishna, there will be that logic. He is logic, Krishna. Therefore, logic will be satisfied by the Vedic approach. But you'll have the proper realization. But by the non-Vedic, you won't. And even within the Vedic, if you only stick that it's the logic itself that makes the argument, then you'll still miss the point. No, it's the devotion in the discussion that gets the realization. So, you know, so this aspect of non-Vedic to Vedic and Vedic to devotional, then that has to be there. So the Vedic to devotional is the most natural because it has all the compatible elements. Whatever is there in Krishna's nature is there within the Vedic culture to take care of it. Krishna likes eating, Mother Yashoda knows how to cook. Right? Krishna likes eating, what's his name? Colonel Sanders doesn't. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So there's a problem. You know. Does that make sense? You know, what if we make, you know, how you say, tater tot nuggets? Then, okay, but where's the flavor? You know what I'm saying? So that's the problem, it's not considering Krishna. Well, the Vedic will consider what Krishna likes. Now, whether you actually care about Krishna or not, that's then the individual's, their own determination, their own inspiration. So the point is the Vedic culture is actually meant to please Krishna. So all the aspects that are there are for Krishna's pleasure. Right? Does that make sense? And so then the interaction, since the devotees are pious and they follow everything to please Krishna, therefore all the negative aspects are not necessary. Right? In other words, things that are punishments and corrections and aren't required. But it's not that they're not known, because that's part of the impetus to perform an activity in a particular way. Right? It's just like, is Krishna and his energy non-different? Yes? No. Him and his energy, are they non-different? Yes. Right? But at the same time, to expand rasa, they're different. So now, therefore, all interaction between the Lord and his energies then is for the purpose of his pleasure. And of all the different tastes that can be gained, then in the spiritual world, the conjugal is the highest of that, Radharani and her associates. So does that mean now, with impudence, that they can walk around as they like, to deal with Krishna as they like, wherever they like, whenever they like? It loses the flavor. Therefore, there's the rules that, you know, married women don't go off with other people. Therefore, then they you know, at night they hide, they mask the whole thing, they keep it all secret. That increases the flavor. But because it's about Krishna, it's perfect. Right? How you run your family, that's not the really way to do it. But that Krishna's the center and it's all about Krishna, that you do. So therefore you're taking that mood of the residents of Vrindavan, that's all about Krishna, and then whatever situation you're in, then in household life or whatever, then you are engaged always in Krishna's service. So you get the same effect. Does that make sense? So we have to know, the primary is always to be taken, and then the secondary we have to see, does that match us? Because the secondary in the spiritual world is about Krishna. Like, Mother Jashoda's love for Krishna is the primary. Her cooking for Krishna is the secondary. Now, if we just take the cooking and don't take the primary to please Krishna, then, yes, we can learn a lot from the Vedic culture, but have we actually gained any real benefit, eternal benefit? No. We've gotten the pious benefit, and it's better than anybody else's cooking, but it's not going to be... No offense intended. So therefore we have to see it in the full context, that it's that they see everything for Krishna, therefore they use cooking for Krishna, and so therefore we want to do everything for Krishna, so we use cooking for Krishna. But if we just take the secondary and just say, oh, we're doing that and that's Vedic, so therefore everything's perfect. No, it's a nicer, not perfect. Right? Does that make sense? That's the whole thing. It's the Vedic will give the best taste in rasa. The modern, it's not about rasa. Right? It's all on secondary. You know, you drive by in your car, what do you expect from people? Amazement, you know, dread, you know, all these other kinds of things. You don't expect that it's going to enhance other, you understand? Unless it's conjugal, of course. But. Does that make sense? So generally it's not that, it's that everybody will be amazed. See the uniqueness, the specialness. So it's not about primary rasas at all, it's all about secondary. And so the secondary rasas being primary, it's out of balance because they don't actually have a primary rasa. And so then there's a problem. So,
this material chronology is about actual figures. And this Vedic chronology is to understand Krishna step by step.
Yes.
But so that's why it is called the time is insignificant in Vaikuntha.
Is that why it's called time is insignificant by Kunta? Yes. Because it's about tasting the relationship between the devotees and the Lord that's significant. It doesn't matter the order. Like you hear in Krishna book, many of the stories are presented in a chronology, but sometimes they're not. Because in one story, another, you know, a question comes up, it goes to another story, and it may follow that path for a while, then go back to the original thing. Or going forward, you ask a question, well, why is that there? Then they go back to a previous thing that was there. That's just how dialogues go on. You understand? So the point is the dialogue is trying to affect a particular understanding. And that understanding is to bring us closer to Krishna. Like that. So whatever facts and figures are there, then they're presented. But they're only presented for the purpose of understanding Krishna. If it doesn't understand Krishna, what's the point? Yeah.
This question must make theological teacher learn. Our talk was not about that topic, so whatever preconceived she has. He said that your marriage arrangements seem to be quite strict. So what's the difference between the Vedic and Western in the approach to marriage?
The difference in the approach to marriage means the Vedic is looking at the long-term relationship and the development of that relationship and ultimately coming to the platform of real self-realization from interacting in that relationship. So therefore the strictness is there to ensure that you do actually have a combination that can actually provide a lasting positive interaction and one can bring that to the transcendental position. Well, in the modern, they're going at potential because I have a feeling. So there's potential for a relationship, but the actual science of seeing that relationship matures and deepens is not there. So you could say the major difference would be then the approach. Well, the modern is in passion, that it's sweet in the beginning and bitter at the end. The Vedic then is the mode of goodness, so it may appear to be bitter in the beginning, but it's sweet at the end. Right? And if you have a proper cultivated taste, then the bitter taste is also a nice taste. It's just you still end with sweet. You don't start with sweet and end with bitter, even though the bitter may be okay. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. The Vedic concept is you should end with sweet, not bitter. So that's why it's strict to make sure that everything's in line. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So like that.
She highly appreciated it. She knew about the varnas. So she asked, which varnas match and like that. Kind of my further question would be, what is the essence that you don't go over tea? Is it that the principle-based person doesn't fit the artistic to our central?
No, it's a matter of equal nature. The Vedic concept is equal nature, so therefore it's compatible. You have the equal nature and then the masculine and feminine principle within that nature. So that's what you're looking for. So if you mix the varnas, problem is when it comes to lust, maybe there may be some common ground. But then the difficulty comes is that since most of your day is not based on that principle, you know, actively, therefore, where's the compatibility? Someone likes things very formal and very structured, and the other person doesn't at all. You know what I'm saying? But in passion, who cares? So when you're not dealing on that platform, how are they going to communicate? Someone likes to see things from an intellectual point of view, the other one is just totally sentimental. Right? Someone sees from what should be done, someone's from what I want to do. Or even if you take it that they both, you know, what you should do, but each one has an idea of what you should do. One says you should vote for Hillary, the other one says you should vote for Trump. You have a problem. Right? Does that make sense? You know, donkeys, horses, elephants, horses. Okay. Elephants, donkeys? Never together. You understand? Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that it's not going to work out. You have to have equal nature. So that's what it's looking for. That's why it's strict. It's ensuring equal nature. So therefore, you have the best shot at developing and cultivating a relationship. Or as mentioned by one gentleman from Bihar, from the village there, in a BBC documentary on life, village life in Bihar. Why Bihar? I'm not sure, but that's where they ended up. And the BBC man then asked something about marriage and all that, the same kind of thing, that it seems to be quite regulated and strict in that, and you know, so much arrangement is there and this and that, it's not just a spontaneous thing. So he made the comment that in the West, you marry the person you love. In the Vedic tradition, you love the person you marry. He says, that's the difference. So one can last, the other may or may not last. And by modern statistical analysis, it's not looking very good. I think in some places we're up to 75% divorce rate now. You know, so that's not good. So, that's then, as I say. So, all these knowledge and all these opulences of Krishna, their only benefit is use in Krishna's service. Right? Just like the Ganga water, you offer it to the Ganga. Right? Does that make sense? That it's offered to the Ganga. So, Krishna's opulences are offered to Ganga. I mean, to offer to Krishna. So Brahma, seeing with his body, mind, and words that he can't understand the Lord, therefore what's given by the great personalities, and in this case the residents of Braja, their love for him, then he wants to follow in the footsteps of that affection. Right? That's then what's going to be. Because otherwise that's the best way to please Krishna. Because Krishna is about pleasing the devotees, and the devotees that please him the most are the Brajavasi. All devotees please Krishna. But the Brajabasis especially please Krishna. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Lord Krishna said, O Brahma, what you have said is absolutely true. There is no one else in the universe who can explain about my form, my Vraja devotees, my pastimes, and my bhakti in front of me. Fearing that the Lord would request him to speak further, Brahma then speaks with shame, fear, and repentance. I am of that category. I am the greatest fool. Lord Krishna said, O Brahma, then why have you spoken till now? Right? If you're like that. Brahma replied, speaking too much in your presence will show my foolishness. Lord Krishna says, O Brahma, please speak the truth. Brahma replied, my mind cannot grasp your powers by meditation. My eyes cannot grasp your form. My words cannot describe you. As I said previously, who can describe your heaps of good qualities? Right, so that he does it like that. So we see is that it's always this wonderful exchange between the Lord and his devotees, that he may take these seemingly opposing positions just to bring out the taste of the interaction. So Brahma, seeing that this might come up, then he speaks in such a way that, no, I'm a fool, so. Okay. Brahma continued, "My dear Krishna, I now humbly request permission to leave. Actually, you are the knower and seer of all things. Indeed, you are the Lord of all the universes. And yet I offer this one universe unto you." Footnote 33. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 39, the Bhagavad Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the Unlimited Dimensions of Rasa, Siddha Prema Rasa, Rasa Garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book. So, he's whatever is his, like for, technically for Brahma, the whole universe is his. So he takes the universe, his activity in the universe, his position in the universe, everything connected to him, his body, his mind, his work, and offers that all to Krishna. So that's the whole point that we're trying to get to, is that complete surrender, that complete absorption in Krishna. So we see this. And then Krishna, then he reciprocates that. Because if you completely surrender to him, then Krishna reciprocates by that surrender back. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates. Lord Krishna said, "O Brahma, so what if you cannot understand my full powers? Can I understand you?" So then he says, "Can I understand your powers?" In order to express the fact that he can no longer answer, Brahma, with shame, makes the following request. "Please give the order which expresses your true thoughts. Give the order to the fallen person, unqualified to remain before you another minute. As I am most fallen, I will go to the suitable fallen place, Brahmaloka." Like that. That's his suitable fallen place. Ours may be Tallahassee or wherever it is that we find is our spot, right? "Oh Krishna, here, Krishna. Here, the hint of the word Krishna is, please attract my mind to Vrindavan. I have prayed that you make me a blade of grass in Gokula, 10:14:34. But there has been no response from you, even by so much as a glance," right? I asked to be born as a blade of grass, and he didn't even get an adjustment in his features. He didn't say anything. Right? "So what more can I do standing here? It is better that I quickly go away," because he's worried. He doesn't actually understand, he'll just make offense. So that's why he's saying, you know, he begs for permission to leave. So we see, because sometimes we may wonder, why the demigods are there with Krishna? Why would they want to leave so quickly? Because up to this point, they've done okay, right? And now they want to, you know, on a good note to leave before they mess it up, right? Okay. Yes?
Is it like the demigods? The Brahmachari Bhava is, you know, supposed to manifest in Brahma. That's the reason why he wants to leave.
The Vyabhachari Bhavas. I would just say we take it from here, is that if you're taking fear and those things like that. But, The point is his feeling of inadequacy to actually understand the Lord. So that's the position. Sorry?
It doesn't apply for his position.
You wouldn't necessarily bring it in from here, because it's not so much about bringing out the... It means you do have that aspect of the rasa, but it's not being brought out so much. Yeah. "I am an offender for having interrupted your meal on the bank of the Jamuna. I am devoid deprived of drop of nectar of one word from your lips." Right? So he came there, Krishna's happily eating his lunch, he took the calves, so then Krishna interrupted his lunch. And then he had to expand and do all that, so then it goes on for a year, and now he's come back and he's now having his lunch. Right? And so then Brahma's offering his prayers and he's disturbing his lunch. That's how Brahma's looking at it. So. And Krishna's not even hadn't said anything up to now, so. With your friends and calves, finish your pastimes with lively verbal exchanges and eating on the bank of the Jamuna. What indeed can I ask for in my tremulous condition? With this intention, Brahma says, you know the power of my mind, words, and body. I am not the master of the universe. You are the master. Not one of the universes, but all of the universe. This meager universe, which is your wealth, not mine, I offer to you. Give this universe to whomever you like, to whoever is qualified in your eyes. So he's even not even stating that he wants to, you know, just take up his position as Brahma, is that you give you the universe, now you do with it as you please. If you think someone else should get it, you know, like that, then, you know, like that. He's leaving it open. So he's just fully surrendering. Lord Brahma continued, my dear Sri Krishna, you bestow happiness upon the lotus-like Vrishni dynasty and expand the great oceans consisting of the earth. The demigods, the Brahmins, and the cows. You dispel the dense darkness of irreligion and oppose the demons who have appeared on this earth. O Supreme Personality of Godhead, as long as this universe exists and as long as the sun shines, I will offer my obeisances unto you. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, you don't want to speak to me because I am an offender. But then at least show mercy by giving the nectar of your glance. By this meal I will be able to maintain my life for the rest of the kalpa. Right? For just his glance, that for him will be a meal to maintain his life for the rest of his meal. Expressing this feeling, Brahma offered his respect to Krishna. You are the sun, glance with the right eye, who makes the lotuses of the Vrishni dynasty bloom, joyful. I am the offspring of a lotus. Therefore, you should show mercy and make me blossom also. Right? So very subtle points that the acharyas, then understanding the poetries and these things and the indications, then can appreciate these aspects. Right? These reading, being able to see these fine points, then when it's connected to Krishna and on that transcendental platform, then it brings out great taste. If we do this on the material platform of Pajalpa, sometimes it doesn't work out so well when we read things into other people's statements. You are the moon, glance with the left eye, right? Because in the Virat Roop, then his right, the sun and moon are his eyes, so the sun is his right eye, the moon is his left eye, right? So, glance, increaser of the ocean, right? Because as the moon creates the tide, and it controls the tide, right? So the tide comes up because of the moon, but the tide only goes up to that point and stops and goes back. That's why people have, with great confidence, they build a boardwalk, right? Because they know it'll stop at this point. Otherwise, so that's the influence of the moon. The moon increases the ocean. So you are the moon, glance with the left eye, increaser of the ocean, for all the inhabitants of earth, for the devas, birds and cows of Vrindavan, giving them nourishment. Be merciful to me, the lowest of the devatas, and nourish me as well. Right? Because everything, the moon nourishes everyone, because from that all the seasons, the plants, everything is growing nicely, and from that everything is nourished. Right? Be merciful to me. Okay. You are the destroyer of dense darkness in the form of atheism. Glance with both eyes. And take away the atheism in me which took the form of trying to spread illusion to you, my master, so that I will not make such mistakes again. Right? So here what we see is atheism means that we're not considering the Lord in the situation. Right? We're used to just using it more of a derogatory term. You know, like kids calling each other Mayavadis when one upsets the other, right? But the point is, this just means, it's atheism means non-theistic, means it's not God-conscious. Right? Does that make sense? That's the point. It may be someone may or may not have faith in the Lord, but when they're behaving not considering the Lord, that's then not theistic. So he's saying then glance with both eyes, because the sun and the moon both remove darkness. Right? And then both create enthusiasm. Right? Means in the day when the sun comes out, one's enthused. Right? That's the mantra. And at night when the moon's out, especially when it's full, one is enthused. Right? Does that make sense? So, like that, to remove the darkness, and to that we may be enthused in Krishna consciousness, then that's what he's asking for. Yes? Okay, yes. And so what causes us to make mistakes is the non-Krishna conscious stuff. So if there's something's going on, we may say, no, but I did this all for Krishna. Yes, you did it all for Krishna, but the part that wasn't Krishna conscious, that's the problem. Does that make sense? You know, so one cooked for Krishna, but the time when you were not thinking about Krishna, but were thinking about some other ordinary thing, that's the time when you got the salt wrong. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. You can say, no, but I did it for Krishna. Why did it come out like that? Because what you did for Krishna, that's the nice part. The part that's not nice, like everything else is nice. It looks fabulous, it's cooked nicely, the spicing is great, everything, just the salt's wrong. Though you killed the demons on this earth, you blessed them by having them enter your body. You should then purify me also with that punishment, since I am a Brahma Rakshasa, having done away with your calves and cowherd boyfriends. The servant can live happily upon seeing either the mercy or curse of his master, but cannot live at all seeing his master disinterested. If you do not give mercy, then at least curse me. So one or the other, something, there should be an interaction, because then something can be done. Right? So that's the thing, because servitorship means there's that aspect of respect and those kind of aspects. I should satisfy Krishna, whom previously I thought was acting improperly as God, for happily playing with the cowherd boys with decoration of gunja seeds, clay, peacock feather, and cane. Right? Because he's used to seeing God dressed a slight bit different. Right? Everything's solid gold and vaidurya gems, and you know, it's not none of this gunja mala and that kind of jazz. I pay obeisances to you, decorated with gunja beads and wearing arka flowers of Vrindavan, which are normally forbidden for worship. I pay obeisances to you who are worthy of my worship, or are worthy to bestow mercy or withdraw it from me. Right, so he's asking that there, because then there's interaction, then the relationship is going on. Indifference means the relationship's not happening. Right, so that's why it's worse. Right? So, how you say? So therefore, sometimes people become confused who do not know the padati. How you say? In the way of yes means yes, no means yes, but indifference means no. Right? Yes? So that's the point here, is that because of that indifference, then that means there's no relationship. But if you're saying yes or no, there's a relationship. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. Indifference is the non-relationship. So what is the mood of the devotees with those who are inimical? Indifference. So that means there's no relationship. What is the relationship between the devotee and sense gratification, or things, objects of sense gratification? Indifference. Therefore, there's no relationship. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. That's why indifference is a key point. And the modern indifference is not nice, because everybody's about, you know, whatever they can squeeze out of anything here. So indifference is seen from the Mayavadi point of view, is that if I'm indifferent, then I reject everything. Here, indifference just means you don't interact. Right? Only whatever's necessary, that's what's done. So you follow the rules to interact. Mm-hmm. When I interact because of my interest, that's the thieves that steal away everything. But when I'm interacting because it pleases Krishna, then it's perfect. So I'm indifferent to the mundane benefits, but I'm engaging everything in Krishna's service. Yes.
So that's the essence of the mentality of the sannyasa.
Yes. That's the point that Krishna's trying to get the devotees to. That's what he's explaining to Arjuna. Because then when you come to that point, it's all about Krishna. Right? So then one's got from the, I'm doing it for myself, but I also, you know, do it for Krishna. Two, it's just being done for Krishna. You know, so you go from the neophyte to the Madhyama platform, but then he brings it to Uttama platform, that it's only to please Krishna, so it's not even about the work that's being done. The work that's being done is what's appropriate for myself in this particular situation. But doing service to Krishna, that's the thing. So you see that that's then the step before Sarvadharma Parityaja. Does that make sense? So it's the natural progression. Okay. So if we're attached, engage in Krishna service. That time then it'll come to we're indifferent, but we still engage in Krishna service. Right? And then it'll come to the point where we're just engaged in Krishna service. You know? So the mundane concept, we're indifferent. But if one sees everything connected to Krishna, where's the indifference? But seeing it not connected to Krishna, one's indifferent to that. You know what I'm saying? So the Madhyama may see something not connected to Krishna. Right? So he's indifferent to that. And then what things he sees connected to Krishna, you understand? So he's discriminating there. But for the Uttama, everything's connected to Krishna. So if it's within my nature to engage that in Krishna's service, I will. But if it's not, why would I? You don't see the cowherd boys running into the kitchen and cooking lunch for Krishna. Right? You know? Okay. Sukadeva Goswami said, having thus offered his prayers, Brahma circumambulated his worshipable Lord, the unlimited personality of Godhead, three times, and then bowed down at his lotus feet. The appointed creator of the universe then returned to his own residence. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, what was desired by Brahma? Actually, he desired to attain Krishna in Vrindavan. However, he desired to be sent by the Lord to Brahmaloka, his own abode, because in his responsibility as the creator of the universe, if he gave up his post, the universe would not work properly. According to the reasoning of Brahma Sutra, the Devatas remain in this world until the end of their tenure, 3.3.14.33. Thus, after fulfilling his responsibilities in the post of Brahma, Brahma would attain his desired goal of residence in Vrindavan, right? Because otherwise, everything has to go on and so that Krishna can come and perform his pastimes. Means Krishna, of course, can do it himself, but that's why he's come in the form of Brahma to do that. So therefore, as the incarnation of the Lord, as the mode of passion, it's his job to do all that. And so by doing that, then he'll please Krishna, because then it gives opportunity for the Lord and the devotees to perform their pastimes, the other devotees to get inspired, the sadhaka is therefore to take up devotional service. So it all works nice. So at the end of his life, then he will go. Right? So that's the point. He has that confidence that if you just stick to devotion, there is nothing else other than devotional service, so therefore if you stick to the devotional service, you will get the Lord's mercy. Right? One could doubt, no, but how do we know we'll get the Lord's mercy? That means we think there's something else other than Krishna and his will. Right? Because if there's only, the universe is Krishna's, it's only here for his purpose of becoming the rebellious souls becoming devotees, so therefore why would remaining in devotional service not give the desired results, since that's what the purpose of the universe is for? Does that make sense? I put something in the freezer and then I sit on the couch and in anxiety wondering, will it really freeze? Well, you know, what if it doesn't freeze? You know, does that make sense? You know, that's the whole point. Is that, no, that's what it is. That's what it's meant. But the material world's meant to reform the living entities back to pure Krishna consciousness. So if you stick to Krishna consciousness, the result will be there. You just have to stick to it. That's why all the things that aren't pure devotional service are advised to avoid, because they can distract you from it and you won't be doing devotional service. So that's why then one sticks to just pure devotional service, then it works nice.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki,
Jai
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki,
Jai
Nitai Gaura Premananda ki.
Can I shout it? The teacher's question. Then could we say that your statement, I think it was the way that in Western they love the, which way?
They, it means you marry the person you love.
Yeah.
So you love them now, you marry them. Now if you stop loving them, then you divorce them.
Yeah.
Well, the Vedic system is who the person you marry, you yeah. develop your love for them.
Yes, yes.
So that just keeps growing and developing.
Because
you're married to them, so you're going to love them.
Yeah.
The other one is, I only marry you because I love you. So if I don't love you, then I don't become married.
Could we say that that's the selfishness and the non-focus to the training is, in one sense, also the approach difference?
Yes, because it's about themselves, that I love you, therefore I get married. If I don't love you, I don't get married. Or,
yes.
You know, like that. So it's about themselves.
Yeah.
It's not about the other person.
Yeah.
Quite common.
Huh?
Quite common.
Yes, quite common.
Very cool.